Illegally Deaf is a podcast about overcoming obstacles. I'm Danny Burnside, and just this year, I was diagnosed with severe hearing loss. Oh, did I mention I'm a professional Hollywood voice actor? Funny how that goes. I've made the decision to own my disability and interview remarkable guests who are thriving in light of being disabled. Welcome to the Illegally Deaf Podcast. Hey, John, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. Excited to kick off this podcast with you as the first guest.
Yeah, me too. I'm really honored that I was the first person that you chose.
It's an honor to have you, John. And when I thought about who I was going to invite for my first guest, your name instantly came to mind. Not only do we have a lot in common as it pertains to the theme of this podcast, in that we're both voice actors, we're also both hard of hearing, which was the entire idea that spurred this concept in the first place. And I thought, you know what? John is the perfect guy for the job for my first guest. So thank you so much, sir, for being the first guest.
Thank you. And, you know, being hard of hearing is, I say, amusing. It's not really amusing, but I've had people ask me, what are you, deaf?
Hilarious. Well, I like to find comedy in everything. It is pretty amusing. As a matter of fact, you know that huge brass instrument that you see in the old cartoons where folks hold that up to their ear like, Shay, can you say that again, Shay? I thought about getting one of those just to have a running joke around people.
And it's so, again, amusing on one hand, but then on the other, it can be so serious.
Yeah, you're right. It is. And I hope to cover all of that ground. So folks, John Watkus is my guest today, the first guest on the Illegally Deaf podcast. Illegally Deaf is a show about overcoming obstacles. John is a high-stakes performance coach, a professional public speaker, a voice actor, and this is some interesting knowledge here. John was the first ever Canadian Mufasa in the musical The Lion King. That's pretty amazing, John.
You know, it was also an unexpected event because I only auditioned for that show because I had a weekend free. I was traveling. Yeah, I was traveling at the time. I was teaching seminars worldwide, and I opened up the newspaper, and there was an ad that said Singers Wanted for The Lion King. So I thought, what the heck? I'm here for the weekend. Why not audition?
What city was this, John?
This was in Toronto.
Hilarious.
Toronto was home, and I really had no idea that I would make it. I thought maybe for auditioning, they might give me some tickets to see the show or something like that.
Right.
You know, because going back to high school, I was a theater arts major in high school. I failed grade 11 theater arts, and it kicked me out of the school.
Wow.
And I didn't even make the pajama game.
Hilarious.
Who knew?
Okay, so I want to come back to The Lion King because I'm wondering if you had already been diagnosed with hearing loss at the time. Real quick, guys, John and I met by way of Charisse Glenn, who is a Hollywood commercial casting director. Charisse put together a group of individuals for a show called Vocal First Impressions. It was during the pandemic, and it was via Clubhouse app. Vocal First Impressions was a show where folks would come on stage before a panel of me, John, Charisse, and a producer named Diana Lansling, and they would give their vocal first impression. One of us would have a random question for them, just for an example, just as a silly example. Who was your greatest athletic mentor growing up? Just anything. What's your favorite color, right? And then before knowing anything about these people, we wouldn't check out their profile. Obviously, we wouldn't be seeing them because this was an audio-only app. We would get a vocal first impression of the individual. And that is like how they handled the question, their vocal tendencies, their inflections, their musicality, everything, their personality, how they own the stage. And then we would go through our panel and we would all give our remarks on what our vocal first impression of the individual was. I got to give it to Charisse. I mean, obviously she's a casting director, John. She put an awesome cast together. I always thought me, you, Charisse, and Diana was a killer cast. I think you agree with me there.
Absolutely. There was so much diversity and range of experience in that group. And we were able to find different nuances in a person's voice. It was always a fun time.
It was a blast. And guys, you ever have that experience where you listen to someone talk for about 2 or 5 minutes and you're like, wow, this is a smart person. This is an intelligent person. John, that's exactly the impression that I had the first time I ever stepped on stage with you.
Wow. And that's such a compliment, especially knowing how deep you are in the industry and what a level of expertise you have. So thank you. And of course, the feeling is mutual. I've always, always loved hearing you speak, the texture of your voice. I can listen to Danny all day. I love it.
Oh, I'll take it. I'll take it. So it's kind of unique, John, isn't it, to be a voice actor who's hard of hearing, right? We're both in that position.
It is. So much of it is being able to listen to what we've done and determine how it's coming across to others. And then even hearing ourselves, I've recognized there's so much lost, even in the pronunciation of words, that we may not notice is being affected by our inability to hear. We are overcoming an obstacle that is so crucial to being able to do this type of work well. Not knowing about it before probably helped that we weren't deterred. I think maybe if we really thought about it coming in and thought this is a disadvantage, this is not something we should be able to do, then we probably might have gone in a different direction. Who knows? But it's great that we find out after we've been okay and been doing it that we can do it.
I mentioned this to you when I was asking you to be my guest. Appearing on this show requires a large degree of transparency, open-mindedness, and I would say open-heartedness or open-soulness, if those are words. You have to really be willing to expose yourself to be a guest on this show. So, John, thank you for that willingness, my friend.
Absolutely. I'm finding, especially as I get older and experience more, recognize that there's something that I've been going through and I think it's only me. But if I talk about it, someone else says, oh, wow, I thought I was the only one. So this opportunity to be transparent and let people hear about it lets them know that they're not alone.
Completely agree. A quick dedication. This is unreal, John. I literally found out this morning that my choir teacher from high school passed away. His name was Gary Lamprecht. He was perhaps the best teacher I've ever had in my entire life and one of my mentors growing up. We kind of had a rough childhood, and this guy really, I don't want to say saved my life. That might be a little too much, but he definitely kept me on the right track. So if I may, guys, like dedication, I just found out this morning. It's unreal. You can call it kismet or whatever, John. This is the first episode. You and I have been trying to schedule this for a couple weeks. Here we are ready to go, and literally 45 minutes before, I find out that one of my greatest mentors in my entire life passed away. So a quick dedication to Mr. Gary Lamprecht. So, John, take us back to the stage of The Lion King. Were you diagnosed with hearing loss at the time of that audition for The Lion King?
I was. This goes back to 1996 when I was first diagnosed. I was working for Columbia House. For those who are old enough to remember what Columbia House was, we sent CDs and VHS tapes in the mail. And I was making a transition in 1996 to speaking full time. I knew there was something wrong. I didn't know exactly what it was, but I knew there was something wrong and that I wasn't hearing as well as I should be. And that's when I went to the ear, nose, throat specialist and got diagnosed with hearing loss. In fact, what happened was we were going through the regular tests, the beeps, and at one point he was asking me to repeat words. He said, "Will you repeat after me?" And I kept repeating the words. And then he covered his mouth. We were between glass. There was a glass between us. He covered his mouth. Then he said the words, and I couldn't repeat it. And he said, "You've been reading lips all this time." I had no idea that I had been compensating. That was 4 years before I auditioned for The Lion King.
Wow.
But that was that first moment where I recognized, holy cow, I have been. Again, knew something was wrong, but didn't know it was to such a degree that my body or my nervous system had made the adaptation to look at people. And now when I'm talking to people, I still give them this intense look because I have to see what they're saying in order to get it.
I discovered my own disability during the pandemic because all of a sudden everyone had a mask on and there was a layer of plexiglass when I would go to the store or the bank. And that's really, you know, if I really peel back the onion here, probably in my mid-30s, so 5 or 6 years ago is when I probably noticed it, but I didn't accept that or really realize it until 2 or 3 years ago in the pandemic. And all of a sudden, everyone had a mask and the plexiglass, and I was like, wow, I can't hear anything.
Yeah, wow. That's an unsettling feeling.
It was, and it's taken me, not because I was afraid of this, guys, but it's taken me until now, and I can't tell you why. I'm sure there is some fear involved, let's be real. It's taken me until now, 2 or 3 years later, to actually get my hearing aid journey going. As a matter of fact, John, literally just this week, Well, last year I met with an ENT as well. An ENT is, as John mentioned, an ear, nose, and throat doctor and an audiologist. And so, of course, I discovered this last year. But just now, this week, I had my first fitting. Well, okay, rewind. I did a fitting. This is funny, John. I did a fitting with the audiologist last year, a hearing aid fitting. Every time I spoke, there was a reverberation or a crinkling in the left hearing aid. And John, she wouldn't believe me. It's the weirdest thing. I'm not even going to name the audiology place because I don't want to throw anyone under the bus. This was a professional place. She wouldn't believe me that every time I spoke, there was a crinkling in the left hearing aid. She's like, well, no one's ever said that before. And I think that really turned me off, John. I think I was not confident in her skill or ability. And just this week, I went to Costco and tried on some hearing aids. And wow, no crinkling. They sounded great. And look, I'm not throwing anyone under the bus. I'm not saying Costco's the way to go. Probably the way to go is a professional audiologist. But isn't that funny, John? Someone who's a professional, supposed to be leading me the right way, wouldn't take my word for it based on my disability. Isn't that hilarious?
It's hilarious and sad at the same time. We're putting so much trust. We're so, I want to say the word vulnerable. In
perfect word.
To not pay attention, just, it would absolutely be disheartening, and the way it would turn me off too. You've had what I would consider a short hearing aid journey, mm-hmm. from the time that you figured it out to the time you went to it. I just got my first hearing aids, I want to say 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
I had the diagnosis back in 1996.
Right, yeah. A couple decades, but you know, who's counting?
Jump those years. It is. It's there's so much to admitting there's something wrong at that deep level.
Especially when you rely on your voice for a living, as you do. It's not like we're just crunching numbers, which there's nothing wrong with that. But like, John, you're a professional public speaker. That's what you do. That's what you rely on your instrument.
Yes. Even now, going back to the vulnerability, when I do a session, when I do a workshop, at the very start, I say, I'm going to let you know I am hearing impaired. If it's a big room, please speak into a mic. If it's a smaller room, and I say, if I have to come over to you and ask you to repeat yourself, just know it's not you, it's me. My hearing is bad. Again, this is one of those areas where people will say to me afterward, thank you for sharing that. It makes me feel comfortable sharing my disabilities.
I'm such a believer in that. When we come to the table exposed, we allow others to understand that they can match us with that energy.
Yes, it makes a world of difference. It breaks down barriers. It removes the blocks that are in between the communication.
How is being hard of hearing, how does that benefit you as a high-stakes performance coach? How does that benefit you as a public speaker?
It's made me focus more than the average person has to focus, going back to reading people's lips. I had a coach at one point who gave me a survey, and I was supposed to give this survey to people who knew me well. And one of the questions was, what does John do well? Everybody, to a person, John's a good listener. Yeah. John's a good listener. So imagine that I have a hearing deficiency, and that makes me listen better. Because I know that if I don't pay complete attention to what people are saying, if I don't watch them and stay engaged 100%, I'm going to miss it. There are times, because I haven't been perfect with it, there are times when I don't pay attention, when I'm not watching in the conversation completely. I respond to something someone says, and they look at me like, what on earth are you talking about? And it's because I completely missed what they said. I've brought people things they didn't ask me for. Like, what the hell is this? So it's helped me in that I have to be extremely focused when I'm with people, and it makes them feel important when they recognize that's what I'm doing. I've had people say, I was really wondering why you kept looking at me so intently. And then once I share a hearing, they go, oh. So that's been the biggest benefit, is the focus that I have to have, and the connection that I get with people because I'm treating them as if what they're saying is important.
Is your hearing loss based on something hereditary, or is it, were you exposed to environmental, like loud noises over and over again? Do you know the origins of your hearing loss?
It was the exposure to loud music.
Wow.
There may be some hereditary points in there. I don't know for sure, but it was definitely the loud music. I used to be in a choir earlier in, let's call it 2018. No, from 2020 on, I was in a choir. And it was a traveling choir that went to huge concerts and churches. And the speakers were those gigantic speakers that you might have in a nightclub. And I didn't wear any ear protection. Mm. So that continuously, year after year, contributed to the loss, especially in my high range. My high range is completely gone.
Is that right? So you kind of have a slope at the end of your audiogram. It slopes downward.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
I sang in choir too all throughout high school and everything, as I mentioned that dedication earlier. When I was getting on my feet in Hollywood, I bartended. For years. And, you know, it's just loud. And if everyone talks loud at a bar, the music's loud at a bar, the sports are turned loud at a bar. I did that for years. So I also, the ENT suggested that I likely also have otosclerosis, which is hereditary. But like I said, I have mixed. So I've got the whole shebang. I've got the hereditary thing and the loud environments thing. It's a fun package.
You were going to get it one way or another.
Exactly. Yeah, I was covering all my bases. How was the transition finally getting the hearing aids? Was there still some resistance? Did you just right away wear them all day when you were up, or were you still kind of resisting? Because I caught myself resisting too and just thinking, maybe I'll just get by on the hearing I have left because it's not that bad if I'm in close proximity.
I was not resistant once I got them. And I will say that part of the reason it took me so long to get them was back when I was first diagnosed, 1996, they told me that, one, I needed hearing aids for both ears. I said, there's no use getting one hearing aid. You need them for 2 years. And at that time, hearing aids were $6,000 a piece.
Ooh, a piece? Oof. Jeez.
Right, not for the pair.
Wow.
Not for the pair.
Wow.
And there's still not any assistance for it.
Well, isn't that wild? Can we talk about the insurance thing? Isn't that wild?
It is wild. It is wild.
Ridiculous. Come on, dude. Your ears are attached to your skull. It's part of your health.
There is so much attached to being able to listen, to hear well. When I was in Florida, because I was continually going to different places, I tried to get some assistance in Florida. They said, yeah, well, your hearing is definitely bad, but there are other people who have bad hearing, bad sight, can't walk. They're going to be ahead of the line. screwed up enough to actually get the hearing aids. What I found once I got them, which it makes me think about my entire personality and how it's evolved, because I'm very introverted. I tend not to start conversations with people. It was to such a degree that I had neighbors who, when I would walk out to get the mail, the neighbors would wave at me and they'd try to start a conversation. I would wave and try and keep going quickly. And then I would actually walk around the apartment complex to avoid coming back and having another conversation. In my mind, I just didn't like conversations with people. And then when I got the hearing aids and I put them on, the neighbor came out and the neighbor started talking to me. And Danny, I settled in and I started having a conversation with her.
Wow.
At no point did I want to get away from that conversation. And that's when I realized I had had social anxiety from the fear of having to, can you repeat that please? Never clicked until I got the hearing aids and I started hearing my neighbor. Oh my gosh. So the resistance wasn't there at all. Once I could start hearing, oh my gosh. And I'll tell you what, there's some settings on my hearing aids. It has an outside setting, so you can hear birds, and it has a regular inside setting. And I was outside with a friend, and she said something about the crickets. I said, what crickets? It's like, you don't hear the crickets? And I changed the setting on my phone, and I heard the crickets.
Wow.
Holy cow. There's so much we miss. So when I get a chance now, even to hear birds, all of these high-pitched sounds were completely out of my range. And it's one, unsettling to hear them, and at the same time, absolutely marvelous
right.
to hear those sounds again.
I read over and over again, just doing my research about hearing aids, that the vast, vast majority of folks say, I can't believe I didn't do this sooner. It's funny that you mentioned being an introvert. So many artists are introverts. Isn't that interesting?
It is. It's wild because we like the stage, and afterward, we need to find a place to curl up and regenerate.
Yeah, because I'm the same way. And I think even just listening to this show, a lot of folks would have the impression, oh, you seem very outgoing. Well, I can be outgoing. But it's that whole public persona, private persona. So many artists, and I don't just mean, artists in general, but maybe performance artists where we are speaking, like John and I both rely on our voice. So we're on stage. Like John and I are on stage. Even in a voiceover booth, even though it's just you and the engineer and the director, you're on stage because that tape is running and your voice is going to be broadcast. It's on stage. And then, you know, John's a professional public speaker. He's been in Broadway shows. We're on stage. How does someone who plays Mufasa in The Lion King be an introvert?
It is that in that moment, it's really managing your energy. And I think people misunderstand introverts to be people who don't like people or who don't like attention. It's more just that we need our energy to be refreshed alone and outside. So when I get on a stage, I love it. It's a highlight. And I would also say some of that has to do with control, because I know that when I'm on stage, I have control of what happens. Step off the stage, that control is completely gone. And so all my energy is on the stage. And when I have to come down and network afterwards, I say have to, when I come down and network after and say hello to people, once I'm done, I'm comatose. I'm just sitting in a chair. I'm not doing anything. I'm not thinking about anything. I am staring straight ahead, but I'm not looking at anything. This is the only way I can replenish my energy. So I know that it is weird, but I've met so many other comedians, performers, feel the exact same way. Once it's off the stage, just need to get back inside and get the energy back up.
What do you miss the most? Let's be real. What do you miss the most about not having a disability? If we can roll back the clock here, what do you miss about not having a disability?
Freedom from having to use all of these devices. Because as much as now it's dependent, there are days when I have, for some reason or another, because I'm not talking to someone, I've left the house and not had the hearing aids on. And the moment someone starts talking, it's like, oh, hell. Or even doesn't even have to be someone talking. I can turn on my podcast in the car and then I recognize I don't have the hearing aids on. I miss that freedom. One of my friends has called me a cyborg because I wear progressive glasses, so I can't see far, I can't see close, I can't see in between. I wear hearing aids, and I sleep with a CPAP machine because I have sleep apnea. I miss that machine-free existence.
Can you describe a little bit what sleep apnea is?
Yes. An apnea happens when you stop breathing during your sleep for 15 seconds or longer. If you hear people snore loudly and then in between stop, there's no sound, and then you hear a big heave or a big snore recovering, that's an apnea. I found out I had sleep apnea officially back in 2022, I want to say. It was 2021. I knew that I was snoring. I knew that I wasn't sleeping well. In fact, there were times that I woke up not breathing and couldn't breathe. I had to wait until somehow my tongue settled and I could start breathing again. Sometimes I would just jump up and walk, very unsettling. So that's sleep apnea. I had it to such a degree that when they finally got my tests, and there was a very long history of that, but when they finally got my tests, they found out that I was having 90 apneas per hour. Calculation of that means that for at least 15 minutes of every hour of sleep, I was not getting oxygen. And it was so dangerous. When they finally got the results of this, and they had somehow not uploaded them when they should have, they took longer to get to me. When they got the results, they were calling my phone like crazy. You should not be driving. You're at risk for a heart attack. You're at risk for brain damage. It was nuts. In fact, this was during a time when we were doing the clubhouse. And although it didn't happen when we were doing our rooms, there were other rooms when I would just pass out. Mm-hmm. I'd be sitting there on the phone during the conversation, and I'd be gone. Wow. So this was happening a lot. Waiting for phone call, I'd pass out. Because I wasn't getting enough oxygen during the night, that I would simply pass out during the day, sitting there, and eventually wake back up.
John, you are a remarkable individual. You really are.
Thank you.
I really am.
I'm fortunate to be here.
It's unreal. You know, how you carry yourself. I think our listeners would just think you got not a care in the world. You've got the whole package. And then we pull back the curtain and we got some cyborg status going on.
There's a lot. I think when people see that side, the one who seems like he doesn't have a care in the world, there's just so much gratitude for being able to wake up and do what I do. It's amazing. The fact that I was at the point where I was not getting oxygen and I was walking around with half a brain and that I couldn't hear and that I can barely see. And somehow I'm still able to do all of these remarkable activities, to do voiceover, to do musical theater, and travel the world teaching public speaking, I have no reason not to smile.
Yeah, that's so inspiring, John. Have any of these disabilities negatively affected personal relationships? You know, we're talking romantic partners. Have you had any negative repercussions with personal relationships due to some of these disabilities?
Absolutely. I'm laughing now as I think back on it, when romantically someone would accuse me of not listening.
Right. Yeah. I understand that one.
And I would say to them, no, I can't hear you. And they think, no, it's not that bad.
It's like, how many times can you ask someone, excuse me or pardon, or can you say that again? Like literally how many times can you say that before it's like, whatever, thrown in the white flag.
Yes. And then to try and not be a bother, nod your head and just pretend and kind of hope that you get the gist of what was being said.
It's an intelligent guess, right? It's like, based on the context of the conversation, I'm guessing this is what you just said.
Yes. So not only that has had an impact. And then with the sleep apnea, that was horrible. For dating, it's absolutely horrible. And even worse if you share the bed with someone.
Right.
They just want to stuff your face with a pillow all night. Because they can't sleep as a result of it. Certainly impact the relationship.
Requires a very understanding partner, I would imagine.
Yes. It's sad. It is. And I'm glad that I'm past that particular obstacle. So I see people saying that CPAP machines are uncomfortable. For me, I love putting it on and passing out and having a good night's sleep. I will take that inconvenience of marks on my face in the morning to get the sleep that I get.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's some degree of confidence that it gives you that you know you're going to rest well, and that's so vital.
It is. And I've had, when I was in Florida, we had a hurricane a year back, and the power went out. And I had to go that one night without the CPAP machine. I was done. I went to a hotel the next day because your head hurts, your throat hurts. Once you get used to sleeping well and then you have to go back, there's no way that you want to experience that again. I was afraid to go to sleep.
Do you experience any tinnitus, like a ringing, a steady ringing in the ears?
Sometimes, yeah. It's a weird thing. It will come and go because the pressure is happening in my ear. So I'm aware of it happening sometimes. I don't know how to get rid of it, but it goes away by itself, and then it comes back when it feels like it.
Did you experience that the hearing aids helped that at all, kind of like mask it a little bit?
I don't think it's made a difference at all when I'm thinking about it. I don't recall so I'm thinking it's something completely separate. I do have, and nothing has been diagnosed on this, but they do tell me that I have a higher pressure level in my ears, but again, not enough that they needed to give any financial aid to get help for it. But they said the pressure was definitely higher in my ears. So I don't know if that had anything to do with the ringing.
John, what would you say to someone listening to this podcast who perhaps has a disability of their own, but is fearful of admitting it to others, or perhaps admitting it to themselves?
I would say that you're okay with the disability. And by that, I mean, we attach a lot of our value as a person to our ability. I know people who won't admit their hearing is bad because maybe it's that will mean that they're getting old, but they feel deficient, and somewhere in themselves, they feel a need to be perfect, to be accepted, to be valuable, to have meaning to other people. So I'd say to them, with or without the disability, you have value, you have meaning, and you are actually going to have such an improvement in your life and feel better about yourself when you admit that this is an issue, because none of us are perfect. The moment we open up and become vulnerable about our disability, our connections will absolutely get better.
I really feel like personally, I'm blessed to be getting old. I feel like, you know, I lost one of my best friends when he was 29. Yeah, it's just one example. But I kind of feel like, you know, all in all, I got a pretty strong hand. Like, we all have a poker hand, right? We were all dealt a certain set of cards. I feel like I got a pretty strong hand. I just happen to have really extremely poor hearing. So that card might not be the best, but the other cards, I'm pretty happy with them.
And as long as we're willing to admit it, sure, I love being old. In fact, I'm going to be 54 next month.
Wonderful, wonderful.
That will be March. And what I'm looking forward to is being eligible for the 55 plus communities. I know it's weird, but I've had my eye on it for the past couple of years. Like, yes, I'm that close to 55 plus communities.
A happy early birthday to you. I mean, just a couple of weeks out.
Thank you. Yeah, I love getting old. I love it that I have a 4-year-old granddaughter. To see that and be there for that, it makes you feel so good to know that you are there for that, and you still have breath. And as you said, I've lost friends very early. Every day, every opportunity to get up and do what we like to do and enjoy doing. Yeah, being able to do that at an advanced age, even better.
Now, John knows, but I have a 2-year-old daughter as well. She just turned 2 this month in February. And I think owning this disability is also a tip of my hat to her. Now, who knows what trials and tribulations she'll go through in life. And I think me as her dad setting an example that it's okay to have some struggles. And the important thing is to own them and not shy away from them or fear them or feel insignificant because of them. I feel like in a large part, having a 2-year-old daughter now, a little bit late in my life, I didn't have her until I was 39. I think she's encouraging me to own this the right way. I think you feel the same way about, you know, your younger family members.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that she gets that opportunity to get all of you without the limitation, that hearing limitation, especially with little voices that can be so hard to hear. And even when they're speaking their best, it's challenging. So what was that? You're going to get so much more of that now because you've given yourself the opportunity to hear her better. And it's going to be just so much better connection. You'll be less frustrated. Congratulations, one, on your daughter. She is such a cutie. And I love that she gets to come out with you to the events now and be seen. She's definitely going to be a force to reckon with as she gets older. But what you're doing now in terms of giving yourself the best opportunity to hear her and be present for her is going to be, even if she doesn't know that that's what's happened, she'll feel that you're giving her all of yourself.
Thank you for saying that. I have to gush about this. We had such an amazing parent experience a couple of weeks back. It was the 10th annual Voice Arts Awards, and they were being held at the Beverly Hilton Hotel ballroom. And I was fortunate enough to be able to be a presenter of one of the awards. And my wife joined me on stage as a presenter, and the producers, Rudy and Joan, agreed to let us have our daughter join us on stage. So literally it's me, my wife, and our 2-year-old daughter on stage at an award show, Beverly Hilton, and our daughter blows a kiss to the audience. I mean, she just absolutely nailed it. You know, she can't even say her name yet, and she's blowing a kiss to the audience. She just nailed it. So we had a really proud parenting moment, and we're going to encourage her, whatever. Look, I would love to get her involved in voiceover. We're a little bit uncertain as to whether we want her to do on camera. That's a whole nother can of worms. But you know what? I'm going to support her no matter what she wants to do. If she wants to play softball, I will be playing catch in the backyard. You know, whatever she wants to do, that's where our support is going
to
lie.
I know that she is in great hands. She is so blessed to have you as parents. Because I know I can just see, even hiking and having her in your backpack, just that love to have the connection with her. She's blessed.
Well, John, you know, as you said, the whole theme of this show is vulnerability. It has been an honor to get to know you a little bit on this show and to follow your example of peeling back the onion or peeling back the curtain and just being vulnerable. Thank you so much for doing that. And thank you for being the first guest on the Illegally Deaf podcast, John.
Thank you for having me, Danny. It was so much fun having this conversation.
You can catch John on Instagram at John Watkiss, all one word, JohnWatkiss. John, do you have any other social media handles you'd like to plug?
My website is johnwatkiss.com.
So once again, that's JohnWatkiss.com. Ladies and gentlemen, the extraordinary John Watkiss. Thank you, brother.
Thanks, Danny.